Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We'll be talking all about dam infrastructure, from why they get built in the first place to what happens when an old dam is removed or should be removed. Our guest today, Brad Wozniak, a senior water resources engineer based in Wisconsin. He's also a professional hydrologist and certified floodplain manager. Brad, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here and glad to talk about dams.
Yeah, Anaquit Guy Ryder is our other guest, a traditional Menominee, resides on the Menominee Reservation. He's executive director of a Menominee Indian community organization called Minneconakim Incorporated. And Anaquit, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, well, I went in, Larry. Glad to be on the program.
Well, great to have you along. You can join in as you listen to these two experts talk. I hope you will join in. You can call us at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. What do you want to know about dams? Join in the conversation. Brad, let's start with you. What do you do as a water resources engineer? Tell us a little bit about your work.
Sure. So I do a wide variety of water resources projects, from, you know, some of the more like dam design, dam inspection, dam failure analyses. And I also do a lot of general floodplain management. Could be, you know, designing levees, you know, flood mitigation projects, or even helping communities figure out, you know, how to best administer their, you know, floodplain regulations for zoning.
Okay, and Anaquit, tell us a little bit about your organization, Minneconakim. What is it all about?
Yeah, well, we're located here on the Menominee Indian Reservation. We have an 80-acre farm here where we do everything from environmental justice to food sovereignty initiatives. We started to build out some energy sovereignty work with solar panels and green energy. We've also helped to lead the fight against a sulfide mine on the Menominee River called the Back 40 Mine.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll be talking some more about that as we move along today. Let's talk about dams in general, Brad, first. Why were all these dams built, somebody wanted to know, and what's their purpose?
Yeah, you know, and there's a wide variety of purposes. You know, I think traditionally we think of dams as those, like mill pond dams, could have been at one time related to running flour mills, sawmills. But then there's other, you know, like commercial navigation. You know, maintaining the locks and dams on the Mississippi River is vital to barge traffic and having a certain depth of water and maintaining that water. But it could also be, you know, flood control or water level, lake level management. Even, you know, the other one that people hear a lot about are hydroelectric generation. And finally, one that, you know, is fairly, you know, there's a lot of them in Wisconsin, or they're, you know, recreational uses. You know, a lot of flowages, impoundments, people like to be able to boat, you know, on a lake, and sometimes dams are used for that, to maintain that pool.
So lots of reasons there. Brad, Anaquit, let's go to you. What's your view on dams and how and why they get built?
Well, you know, I mean, I definitely agree with Brad and some of his points. But, you know, it's hard to, you know, coming from an indigenous standpoint, you know, water is such a sacred thing for us, and it's very essential, you know, to our life as a people. And, you know, to dam up a river, to stop a flow of a river is somewhat foreign to us and doesn't, you can make, you know, a lot of correlations between taking away a food source or stopping a food source. You know, there's a lot of things that happen to the dams. you know, I think that, you know, the impacts that it has on tribal lifeways is very concerning.
Yeah, and certainly we'll talk some more about that as well. How do Wisconsin dams, I don't know, compare to other states in terms of numbers and quality and so forth?
You know, so I think, you know, just by the nature of the landscape in Wisconsin, generally more, you know, hilly and rolling than, you know, the surrounding neighboring states, I think there's generally a large number of dams in Wisconsin. You know, you compare it to like Minnesota, where the land of 10,000 lakes has more of a lake pothole topography. And as far as, you know, I think the thing with dams, and I don't think Wisconsin is any different than any other state, you know, they're largely, you know, they're a high dollar thing to initially build, but they're also a lot of money to properly maintain and operate. So they're largely forgotten until you have issues, you know, unfortunately. So I would say Wisconsin dams are very similar to many dams throughout the country in that respect.
Yeah. Have we done much dam building in recent years?
No, I would say the majority of the dams, you know, that we see nowadays are, or dam-related projects are, you know, updating or, you know, modifications, you know, to existing infrastructure. I would say dams in general, you see very few new dams. Sometimes you'll see replacement of old infrastructure, but you see very few new dams being built.
Yeah. Anaquid, talk a bit more about how dam infrastructure, maybe new and old, impacts indigenous peoples in the state.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to think that at one point, you know, our tribes have been, you know, depending upon the water and depending on the ecosystem that it creates for wildlife, you know, for thousands and thousands of years. You know, we've shared space and shared you know, life with these rivers. When you dam that river up, you know, it affects a lot of things in terms of like temperature, ecosystem, of course, erosion, you know, all these things in it. What it really does is limits, you know, the tribe's traditional diet to being more of a dependence diet. And, you know, you can draw parallels and you can draw connections, you know, to being dependent upon, you know, a foreign diet, which you know, has a adverse, you know, health outcome for us as indigenous people. You know, you can look at obesity, diabetes, you know, cancer, you know, all those things I think are contributing. I wouldn't necessarily say that dams themselves are the root cause of it, but I definitely feel like they play a major role in that.
Yeah. Some callers online, maybe take some calls here. Dennis in Door County, we'll give you a chance. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, we have a dam in Forestville, and the county drained it because of an invasive weed, and the dam really doesn't serve any purpose anymore. It was a mill pond at one time, maybe 100 or more years ago, but now they drained it, and now they're just going to let it fill back up, and it doesn't make any sense. They should just take the dam out and make a natural river out of it, but the county has control of that, and I'm not sure what they're thinking is, but the way I understand it, they're just going to let it fill back up, and it's a shallow, the deepest water is probably 6 to 8 feet, and it seems like it'd be a much nicer situation if they would just take the dam out and let it be a natural river again.
Yeah. Well, Brad, comment?
You know, and again, I think what you're pointing to is, you know, is fairly common. Dams in my profession are probably one of the more controversial topics out there, because you will see, you know, similar to that, you'll see a fair number of people that want to have, you know, they might have lake cabins, might have boats and want to have that reservoir. And we'll see the, you know, another side of it that want to be the free flowing system. And, you know, and the other thing you're pointing to is even with dams maintenance, you know, dams, when they impound water, you know, they will collect sediment. So a lot of times, you know, even if you like that lake environment, you still will have to go back and somehow, you know, remove that sediment at some point.
Yeah. You know, Brad, WPR reported that I think there were 14 dams failing in a 10-year period. I think that was from 2008 to 2018. What makes a dam fail in the first place?
So there's multiple reasons. You know, one, you know, it could be lack of maintenance, could be, you know, vegetation growing that allows seepage through the dam and it, you know, creates more and more seepage and it fails that way. It could be, you know, just, you know, concrete failure. You know, we see that, you know, with the tragic news in Florida, you know, something like that can happen to dams. You know, that's, or it could be, you know, the other thing that is out there that, you know, is still kind of on the tip of how are we going to address this? You know, if a dam was built 50 or 100 years ago, you know, the flow regime now, the you know, whether it be, you know, more intense summer storms may be leading to higher, more intense rainfalls, flow rates at a dam may overtop. And overtopping of a dam, you know, could lead to failure of the embankment.
Yeah. Comment on Dennis's thoughts?
Yeah, I think I share a lot of the similar sentiments that our caller had talked about, because, you know, historically here for the Menominee Indian tribe, you know, we had a the lake sturgeon in Lake Winnebago historically used to come all the way up here to our reservation until two dams were put in place to stop that migration. And, you know, and we depended on that migration, you know, getting through a hard winter to be able to spear some sturgeon and to celebrate that fish's return to its traditional homelands. That hasn't happened in a very long time, since the early 1900s. So, you know, I definitely can understand why a dam like that, especially one of that age, in the climate, the way that things drastically change so quickly, can be inundated very quickly.
Yeah. And I suppose it costs a lot of money, Brad, to take one out, like the one Dennis was talking about.
Yes, you know, and that's the thing with dams. There, you know, they're a lot of money either way. You know, it's just like a car to do. You know, if you want to keep it in place, you have to, you know, put in the money to maintain it. You know, and it's the same way if you remove it. You know, you know, it's not just tearing the structure out. You have to take into account, you know, what kind of sediment is built up behind that structure, and is that sediment contaminated? And then if it is, what do you do with it? How do you draw down the dam? There's to each side, whether you keep it in or remove it, there's, you know, they're both costly, and they need to be well planned prior to execution.
Yeah, I can see that. Dennis, thanks again for calling. Let's go to Al in La Crosse. Al, hi, thanks for calling.
Good morning. I'd like to make a distinction between the usual conception of water retention dams and the dam that is being proposed at the Back 40 site that Aniquette talked about, which is a tailings dam composed of finely ground mine waste that is mixed with a slurry of chemicals that have been used to separate the valuable gold and zinc from the waste material. And this is all piled in a large structure that is not made of steel and concrete, but rather made of the actual mine tailings or the mine waste themselves, crushed rock and soil, which are pushed together to create a mound topped by a lot of liquids that come out of the milling process. And is an inherently unstable structure that is only 150 feet from the Menominee River. And the record of these tailings dams around the world is that when you have these large amounts of mine waste that are piled next to water bodies, that all sorts of stresses occur naturally within the structure of the dam. And when you impose upon that weak structure the problem of climate change, and your engineer referred to the extreme rainfall events, those extreme rainfall events have been associated very very closely with the failure of dams all around the world. A couple of years ago, there was a big dam in Brazil that failed mostly because of both structural instability as well as the increased rainfall and the lack of maintenance and monitoring, and it resulted in 270 deaths of people downstream from the mine, as well as the contamination of the river. If this were to occur on the Menominee River, all that waste containing toxic metals and chemicals would be discharged into the Menominee River and eventually discharged into Lake Michigan, which supplies the drinking water for 44 million people.
Yeah. Well, Al, thank you for calling. Let's get some comments. Aniquette, let's start with you.
Yeah, thank you, Al, for the comment. You know, I think that's something that's extremely important, you know, for us to talk about. You know, these earthen dams are the way that they're constructed, you know, like our caller had said, like Al had said, that, you know, they historically have failed, you know, time and time again. Sometimes it seems to me, you know, quite outrageous that we're even having a discussion of something so dangerous next to a major waterway, you know, like the Menominee River, which flows into one of the Great Lakes. But, you know, sometimes it can seem that common sense is lost. Our common sense isn't so common, in other words. You know, so I think that there's definitely a lot of things that can be, you know, talked about and that we can move in a direction that doesn't dam up a river or stop a river, or that we rely on, you know, rocks and earth to keep back, basically, you know, toxic waste from entering a river.
Yeah. And I'm going to get a comment from you on this, but just a reminder here, we're talking about, obviously, dams here in Wisconsin with two guests today, Brad Woznak, Senior Water Resources Engineer based in Wisconsin, Anaquit Guy Ryder, Menominee and Executive Director of a Menominee Indian Community Organization called Minneconakim Incorporated. Natalie Guyette, and Jane Rotunda as well, our producers today. Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking about dams in Wisconsin with our two guests, Brad Woznak and Anaquit Guy Ryder. It's great to have both of them with us. Certainly, if you have a question or want to join in with a comment, you certainly can. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Brad, I want to go back to Al's comment about the earth and dam. It's a sort of it's a different kind of dam in a way, because it's holding back these metals and so forth from this mining operation, or it's proposed. It's not yet established. Who does have final say in something like that? Do you know offhand?
You know, and in this case, and I'm not familiar with the proposal or this specific site, but typically I'm assuming it would be what's called a large dam, which if it is, you know, classified as a large dam, it would be, you know, permitted by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And there would be a series of, design, documentation, different permitting that would be required, and largely to get an idea of, you know, like the caller had mentioned, the potential, so have an understanding of what all is at risk for such a related dam.
Yeah. Thanks again for that comment and question, Al. Appreciate it. Joe in Star Lake, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Joe.
I'm enjoying the conversation, and we're talking about such large, important impacts on the environment. This is a very simple question, and I was interested particularly in the indigenous viewpoint, and that's the role that beavers play in damming waterways for, you know, forever. And just, you know, what kind of impact? Did indigenous people remove those dams, or did they work with that? So that's the question.
All right. Thank you, Joe, for calling. Anaquit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, historically, our people have always worked with, nature, and we don't have a history of destroying our landscape. And, you know, we found a way to work with it. You know, there's a lot of benefits to a beaver dam, and the way it goes, it surely isn't going to dam a river up like, the Menominee River or even the Wolf River, those kind of large bodies of water. But, we've been able to always work with it. And like I said before, sometimes the way that the beavers dam up can be healthy to the area in which they're doing, because it supplies a lot of things for other animals and organisms within the water.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Joe, for that comment. Lily in Edgerton, we'll go to you. Hi, Lily.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Tara River, south of Stoughton, and we're between two dams, upstream and downstream, but the dam that used to control our stretch of the river was taken out a number of years ago when it was breached during a storm. So we walk every day and cross where the dam used to be on the river with our polarized sunglasses on. And this spring, with the drought, we have noticed the water level going up and down just radically over the course of a day. even during the time when the fish were spawning. And they seem to sort of get stuck when the water disappears and there's no, well, the control is way downstream from us and upstream now. So we're just kind of worried about what's going to happen to the fishery in this stretch of the water since it's not controlled.
Brad, let's go to you.
So I'm not familiar again with this area, but what the one question that comes to mind with the varying flow rates is if there's some kind of, you know, impoundment upstream where they're varying the flow rates, because typically in a natural flow regime you won't see it fluctuate. I mean, we'll see like with the prolonged drought, you'll see general lower flows, but that doesn't sound typical of a natural regime. It sounds more like somebody's throttling and of the flow upstream. Is that
Lily? Yeah, Lily, do you know? They took out one of the dams.
The Stebbinsfield Dam is the one that was taken out, but right upstream from us is the Dunkirk Dam, and that's the one that controls our flow.
Okay, yes, that's so it sounds like to me, you know, and typically, or not typically, but a lot of times they'll have, you know, certain requirements for passing, you know, certain minimum flows, or, you know, for the dam operator. So the hope would be that they're following their prescribed, you know, DNR permitted, you know, outflows.
Where would Lily go if she wanted to get some more information on this, Brad?
So the Wisconsin DNR has a very good website for dam safety. So if you want to go to the dnrwisconsin.gov and dam safety, and a lot of times they'll point out to the Wisconsin DNR also has what they call water management engineers that are prescribed by area. So you can also find your appropriate contact through there, too.
All right, Lily, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's take another call. Eric in Oneida County, your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on. I'd like to go back to what one of the previous callers had mentioned. And up here in Oneida County, we've been dealing with this metallic sulfide mining issue, which is identical to what's going on in the back 40. We're not as far along as they are there. But this earthen dam issue, the upstream dam construction issue along our major rivers, which would eventually be the Wolf River or the Wisconsin River, we have all of those risks inherent with all of that going on up here right now. And we've been trying to roll back this Act 134 and look at a little more intelligent oversight of this type of mining and this particular dam construction. So it's all going on up north, and we're just trying to get a little information out there. I know the people we speak to are not happy about it. We just need the rest of the state to understand that whatever comes from where we're at winds up down where you're at. So if we're dumping heavy metals into the rivers that flow through your town, you need to understand that we're fighting this issue right now up in the North Woods.
Well, Eric, thank you. Anaquit, are you involved? Is your organization involved in any way with Eric's group, issues that he raised?
Well, we are in a sense that we've, you know, definitely been paying attention and trying to get a handle on what's going up there. So the company that is trying to push the Back 40 mine through is called Aquila Resources, and I know that they own some land up there in the Northwoods where they're, you know, looking to do some exploring and some potential sulfide mine dams. So we've kind of been paying attention to it, and the thing about, you know, sulfide mining is it's not that you can turn it off in any way or even dilute it in a sense that once it's, you know, leaching it, it leaches forever. And the other thing I just wanted to mention, too, is that, you know, these dam failures, especially with the dam that Al talked about earlier, the earthen dams, you know, most of those breaches and most of those collapses have occurred in modern times. Even with the technology we have now, you know, most of the spills have occurred, modern.
Yeah. Thank you again, Eric, for calling. I appreciate it. Mike in Minocqua will give you a chance now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Larry, I was a fisheries biologist for about 30 years for Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and I worked initially a lot on Green Bay and Lake Michigan. And one of the lessons I learned early on, I was enthusiastic about just removing dams and hadn't thought the process through, but it's complicated. We had tributaries to Lake Michigan and Green Bay. Very early in my career, I worked on the O'Connell River, and the Stiles Dam was one site that we were looking at dam removal for. And the inland fisheries biologist was very much against removing the dam because he had high-quality trout habitat upstream, and he thought the anadromous trout and salmon from Green Bay would run up and disrupt that habitat. Later on, I was down in Milwaukee and on Lake Michigan, and we were talking about removing the dams on the Milwaukee River, including the North Avenue Dam, but you had to consider what would happen if sea lamprey or Asian carp or some other exotic would make its way up into the Milwaukee River and think through that. And then we had a rowing club and some very influential, wealthy individuals who used the water up above the North Avenue Dam for their sport, and they were against it. And then on Oak Creek in South Milwaukee, we had a little tiny pond that was shallow, very muddy and dirty, no quality fishery in it, but a few swans and ducks and things like that would be on the pond, and you would not believe the tooth and nail struggle that we had with the local community, and eventually we could not remove the dam there because they loved that little pond so much. So the lesson I learned is that it's not easy, it's not simple, and there are a lot of things to consider, including toxic sediments that are behind a lot of our dams, and you have to have a well-thought-out plan to deal with that before you remove the dam. So no, it's not as easy as just pulling the plug.
Yeah. Mike, thank you so much. Well, let's get comments from our guests here. Brad, maybe you first.
Yeah, you know, and I, again, Mike kind of points out to the, like I mentioned, the controversial nature behind dams, you know, whether it be one side free-flowing river to the other side likes feeding the ducks in a mill pond. You know, one thing I thought about as Mike was mentioning the invasive species, you know, there is a project being constructed right now in Traverse City, Michigan, which they're actually looking to, it's called the Fish Pass Project, where they're looking to use different systems to allow native fishes to pass and anadromous fishes, you know, blocking them. So that's, there are some new technologies being tried out there to try to, you know, remedy some of these issues. But again, you know, Mike pointed out the, you know, the wide variety of things that need to be addressed in from both sides, removal or, you know, keeping them in place.
Yeah. Aniquit, any comment?
Yeah, I would, you know, I would agree with the caller and also Brad, you know, that it's not a, obviously a black and white issue. You have to take a lot of things into consideration, you know, before either keeping the dam there or removing it. But I always feel like a good dialogue and you know, good research would definitely guide our decisions.
Yeah. Mike, thank you again for calling and giving us your experiences over the years. By the way, you could join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Questions about dams, experiences you might want to share. Hope you'll join in. Bruce in Slinger will go to you next. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Larry. I take it from a little bit of a different perspective. I'm doing an invertebrate survey on the benthic invertebrates of the Milwaukee River watershed and the Rock River watershed. And one of the big issues that I'm running into is that the number of dams that are on these watersheds that are impeding the river and increasing alga blooms, increases phosphorus, increases nitrogen, increases the biosolids being transported. Temperature is a big deal. And we can't blame everything on the farmers and the non-point source coming in. We also have these small dams on these impoundments, the flower gist dams that are really creating another issue when we are increasing the alga blooms on these rivers. A river that does not flow cannot assimilate waste. And we really need to think long and hard, no matter what it takes in order to get it done. We need to take a look at removing a lot of these small impoundments where there are no houses or anything else on, and get the river to flow again so it can do what it's designed to do, and that is to assimilate anything that's coming into it and create an environment that's going to be healthy for everybody, and it won't end up degrading the water quality of these areas, and then will improve the water quality. So I understand that it's not a simple solution, but by just talking about how difficult it would be, is not. I mean, all you got to do is drive around on any of these tributaries of these rivers, and you'd be amazed that every small city or village has a dam.
Yeah. Brad, comment?
You know, I think the one thing that I heard there that I want to make sure is it is kind of talked about or discussed is exactly, you know, making sure we have an understanding whether or not a dam, you know, just because it was built with a purpose at one time, is the purpose still there? And if not, maybe we do remove them. If, you know, because they are, you know, not only, you know, some of the issues that the caller brought up, but they are also, you know, a high risk structure. So making sure we have a good understanding of not only the number of dams, but, you know, whether or not maybe they've outlived their purposeful life, or they're, you know, they're not needed anymore. So yes, it does bring up a good point that, hey, let's, you know, let's have that discussion and dialogue.
And if when it comes to it now, we certainly have history of this. When it comes to removing a dam, let's say as Bruce brought up, say it's a local community, and there are many of them, hundreds of them probably. When it comes to paying for it, where is the, is there some sort of fund there? Does the community kick in a big share of it? How does that actually work to get one removed?
So it's, you know, the state of Wisconsin does have a dam removal grant, and I'm not overly familiar with it, but they do have information on their, you know, on their website. But largely, yes, it's, you know, the dam owner is, you know, is required to submit permits and develop a plan and ultimately, you know, working with the state if they can work with grants or sometimes, you know, if they're on, you know, there might be other nonprofit organizations that may also, you know, like American Rivers is one that comes ahead that may also, you know, look to chip in on, you know, some of the costs of removing those dams.
Yeah. Anaquette, comment?
I think that the, you know, as much as we can get information and understand the importance of the water quality is should guide our decisions and all we do. I know everybody kind of boils it down to money all the time, but you know, sometimes I think it's the health of the water and the ecosystem that matters most to even discussing whether this dam is makes sense. If it's not doing anything, you know, why is it, you know, even there anymore? And yes, it costs a lot, but you know, I know that majority of the dams here in Wisconsin are either owned by a company or private individuals. I think the, you know, state of Wisconsin has a very small ownership over dams here in Wisconsin, if I'm correct.
Bruce, thanks again. Mark in Tomahawk, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. Yeah, I know you don't have much time, but I'll just put a little input in. I bought a piece of property near Tomahawk in 1994, and when I did, I found out that I had an earthen dam that was built back in the mid-60s. It holds back a water system that consists of two approximately four-acre lakes, and it has a stilling pond, and then the water goes into a river. And at the time, I didn't know anything about it. And then I got a letter from the DNR saying that I was responsible for this dam, and they have it quantified as a low, medium, or high hazard dam. And briefly, over several years, I worked with the DNR, very nice people. And I did most of the work myself. I had to have an emergency action plan, a maintenance and operation plan. I had to do some work to bring it up. And I've been working on it pretty much ever since. I had problems with beavers. One of the drainage comes down to it. It goes through a 6-foot vertical culvert and then goes underneath the earthen dam, which is where the water control is. And only 2 years ago did I finally figure out a way to keep the beavers from plugging it up. Otherwise, I was renting a bobcat like every 2 years and back hose to keep it clean. And I finally came up with a system that thwarts the beavers. And sometime, if anybody wants, I know you don't have much time, but if anybody wants to know more about ways to keep beavers from plugging up your dams and your culverts, the DNR has some pretty good material on beavers and what they do and what their natural instincts are. And by looking at that, I came up with a way to be able to live with the beavers, because people wanted me to say, you know, shoot them or trap them, and I vowed never to kill any of the animals on my property, and I came up with a way to be able to live with them and still have a good water system.
Well, I appreciate the call very much, Mark. And here we are. We could be, I think we could go on for quite a long period of time talking about this. So, Brad and Anaquet, I hope we can have you back to bring this, to discuss this further. I really appreciate the time that you've spent with us today, and I hope you'll be with us down the road, Brad. And Anaquet, thank you both very much.
Absolutely. Yep. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. I always enjoy talking about, you know, water resources in general.
Brad Wozniak is a senior water resources engineer based in Wisconsin. Anaquet Guy Ryder, a Menominee and executive director of the Menominee Indian Community Organization called Minnekotikim Incorporated. Great to have both of them with us. You know, a lot of the discussion, or at least some of the discussion, centered on rainfall and sort of climate kinds of conditions. And rainfall will be on our minds coming up next as we visit with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, talking climate and weather next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.